Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Prizer Show with me, Prizer here on Cornwall Revolution Radio and out of prism.blogspot.com, where Emmanuel welcomes you to the best news aggregate site in the World Wide Web. It's good to have your company, folks. And if you'd like to join us in the chat room, click on the HTML5 chat link on the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. And I'd like to also welcome this as Eurofolk Radio. Good to have you all on board. And I'd just like to make it clear to all listening that I reserve all rights to my words, as do my guests. So, yeah, welcome everyone, wherever you are. Monday, November 9th, 2020, and wow, crazy days really are crazy times around us at the moment. Obviously, the scamdemic that's going on, but also with the US elections or selections or whatever you want to call them, but it's been a crazy few weeks, that's for sure. And so there's more of it to come. But we're going to have a bit of a roundtable show tonight. And we're going to be talking pretty much all things communitarian. And I think this is exactly where we're going. And the guests we have on, you know quite a few of them already. We have Lark in Texas. Lark, good evening.
How are you, sir?
I'm very pleased well, thank you.
Pleased to be here.
Good.
Thank you.
Also join us from somewhere in Washington State. That's Olympia, Washington, I believe. That's Brian and Jenna. How are you doing, folks?
We're doing fine. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Great, great. And then also join us, I'm not sure if I haven't talked with Greg before. Greg Cornones is his name, who Brian and Jenna recommended I get on the show. I think he's well aware of the agenda as well, so we're great to hear what he has to say. Greg, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Good, good. And then finally, we have one and only Nikki Rapana. The lady I think who woke us all up to communitarianism back in the day, and it's great to have her on the show and tell us what's going on in her life at the moment, plus what she thinks of what's happening right now, because it's all full steam ahead here with this communitarian agenda, whether you want to call it a great reset or stakeholder capitalism or whatever, but it's coming, folks, and it ain't going to be nice, so we got to be ready, and we got to know what we're facing here. So, Terry, we'll just start off with the U.S. elections, because it's the big news during the week. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll move on from there? All okay with that?
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. Okay, we'll start with Nikki first, because she's great to have Nikki on the show. Join us all the way from Alaska, somewhere in the middle of Alaska somewhere, which is, I'd say it's getting pretty cold up that way now.
Oh, you want to, yeah. Excuse me, you want me to talk about the election?
Oh, well, yeah.
I'm sorry.
I mean, just, your views on the whole thing, what do you think of it? I mean.
Well, I don't vote anymore because I just know that you're voting for a communitarian. Both candidates are communitarian. Biden is more open and they talk about it more with him. E.J. Dionne in the Washington Post on November 1st said that, you know, he's definitely a communitarian. So with Trump, it's a little harder to discern his position with that because he hasn't been like Bush or any of the previous presidents openly embracing the ideology or having Etzioni in the White House. So we were going to go communitarian here, regardless of who won. So I don't participate in that specifically, that part of it. But I got to say, I'm a little surprised that Biden won because it just seemed like it wasn't going to go that direction, that Trump was going to accomplish a lot more of the agenda than Biden would. But so now I think it's just going to be interesting to see. They're going to roll it out a little bit differently. They're always changing it, too. It never stays the same. Their game plan has so many variables, really depending on public reaction to what they're doing. So I think it kind of makes sense to me now that it would be Biden. But I didn't anticipate that at all. I wasn't really sure, but I pretty much thought it was going to be Trump. So, I'm just as much a spectator in this as anyone else, I think, really. Yeah. That's my take.
Okay. And around Lark, what you're saying, I know you would agree with Mickey as well on this, I presume. Same.
Pretty much. You're talking to someone that dropped out of the system in 1997, and I quit banking and at the end of 2005. And to me, it's just a dog and pony show, and it's all orchestrated. And no, I don't vote. I haven't voted for years and years. But I agree. I kind of think the election was stolen, quite frankly. I think Trump had the votes to win. And I think it's still playing out. And, of course, we're going to be dragged in the mud between now and Inauguration Day, I'm sure.
Right, and can I add one thing? I see the goal, the communitarians need violent clashes between classes of citizens. And since we don't have the proletariat bourgeoisie clash, okay, that the Marxists used so successfully, we don't have a major peasant class that's against the oligarchy or any of that. We have it in small segments. But in order to get the civil unrest, and hopefully the best case scenario for the communitarians is an all-out civil war. So I think that this plays into that in a way, because Trump supporters are traditionally pro-Second Amendment. They're very well armed. They're aggressive. They're pissed. So that if anyone was going to start a fight over this, it would be, I could be wrong about this, but I think that it would be the Trump supporters, the right, the Republican right, the Christian Zionist right, that would have the bigger momentum and the backing, to get into the streets and really start causing, the violence that BLM just barely showed us, but is going to happen, I think, too. You agree with me on that, Lark?
I kind of think the people that are well-funded to actually be out there on the streets and the like are actually of the left. I think it's the conservative right that is, they're pissed indeed, but I think they're laying back. So I would see it differently coming from Texas than someone in the Pacific Northwest or in Alaska, or even other places. But by and large, I agree with you. They want the clash because they want to establish that new middle. And of course, they have to control both sides. So they've definitely controlled the narrative today. But, I kind of think we're going to be treated to a rather interesting spectacle between now and, first of the year. And I think that it's all part of the plan. Nothing has changed since I stumbled upon your research, Nikki, in 2004. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, when you told the story of how you discovered this thing called communitarianism and communitarian law up in Seattle, that I used to live in that same neighborhood back in the 80s. In 1999 and 2000, I was Mr. Businessman. I was discovering how very corrupt municipal government was, because at that time I was trying to sell a $7.8 million project to the city of Dallas, for a project downtown. And I was really kind of out of my league. But, it's a long story and I won't go into it. But, when you were discovering communitarianism and doing all that research and you were on a tear beginning in 99 and 2000, I was Mr. Businessman in Dallas, but we have so much in common, you have no idea.
Yeah, let's bring in Greg. I was surprised to see what happened myself. I thought Trump would walk this one, to be quite honest with you, but I thought also there would be some shenanigans going on, but I didn't think it would be this much or this bad. And I think Trump maybe has something up his sleeve yet, something that's going to come out. And I think he could get back in. Who knows? So we just have to wait and see on that one. But it's certainly interesting times ahead. Greg, what's your take?
Well, I'm in good company. I too have not voted in years. I won't validate this system. I can tell you this. I mean, I used to work on Wall Street, and these guys have been planning this for quite a long time. They started asset stripping the United States in earnest beginning back in 1995. And what you have to realize is, up to this point, just the United States alone, they have asset stripped over $50 trillion out of this country. And now worldwide, all 179 countries have been asset stripped. And really what this is all about, what communitarianism is all about, it's a cover for them to get away with the largest heist in human history. Because what's left on the books after the assets are gone are simply the liabilities. You know, those pesky Social Security payments, the Medicare, the food stamp programs, all those things that the bourgeoisie, many of them, depend upon. And the best way to eliminate those liabilities without having to, let's say, recapitalize or remonetize our economy is to wipe those liabilities off the books. And you do that by breaking up the country, by causing revolutions, okay? The Russian Revolution was just a cover for the largest heist up to that point in that continent's history. They fleeced that country for years, and they want to do the same to the West. I guess it's sort of like our turn. We know who's controlling this. This is very easily pushed back. Trump, unfortunately, I don't know if any of you saw, I live right across the street from a polling station here in Florida, right across the street, okay? In 2016, the lines coming out of that polling station were hundreds of yards long. There were zero lines there the other day, no lines at all. Now, you could attribute that to Corona. You could say that that was because of mail-in voting. All of this was pre-planned. Trump is, A, the biggest fool, because all he really had to do was watermark the ballots, right? And they easily could have traced everything. Two, all he had to do was arrest one guy, one perp that he talked about, arrest Hillary, anybody, and that would have brought people out in droves. Trump, because of all this QAnon nonsense, he lost a lot of his voters. A lot of people sat on the sideline. They claim that this was the most voted election in U.S. history, and that is a total lie, absolute total lie.
Well, I think what you say has some merit. I know that where I live, which is a solidly middle to upper middle class neighborhood, I'm near the University of Texas at Dallas, 3 miles from Texas Instruments. There's a outlet for Texas A&M. I mean, the yard signs were 2-1 Biden-Harris in this neighborhood to Trump. And a lot of the Trump supporters were pulling their signs because they were being vandalized. But I wanted to ask you, Greg, I've been thinking about this thing called force majeure, which is part of every insurance contract that anybody's ever signed. It's generally is an addendum. Codicil is added at the end, but essentially what it says is that in the event of a natural disaster or a time of war, then you can eliminate the contract. You can destroy them.
That's right.
I kind of think that's going to play a role in the final takedown, this thing called force majeure. And nowadays it can be an EMP attack. It can be anything that disrupts the internet, for instance.
Sure.
So do you think that has some validity in this larger picture that we have to be wary of?
Absolutely. As part of if it comes down to a revolution in the United States, which they're trying to foment, they could say that that's an act of war. And as a result of that, they're absolving themselves of all their contractual obligations.
Yeah, and so it's almost like a game of musical chairs. You know, at the end of the day, if you don't have a chair, then you're out, and that's going to be a lot of us.
And they want to control this is a controlled demolition, obviously. That they're breaking this down piece by piece. They bring in these players, but this is all being controlled from the House of Rothschild, okay? This has to do with the Belt and Road Initiative. This has to do with keeping us preoccupied with something as they change this whole global structure. It's the whole world really has to band together to stop this. How we get that done, it's really anybody's guess, but yeah.
Well, earlier when you said it was all about seizing assets, I called it the biggest land grab the world had ever seen. But one of their main programs that they were using in Seattle, which they duplicated around the world, was called Asset-Based Community Development, ABCD. And it comes out of Northwestern University in Illinois. It was created by John McKnight and Jody Kretzman. And back in right around 2000, they brought it to Seattle, and they were teaching it to the community councils, because each neighborhood in Seattle, there was 27 neighborhoods, established neighborhoods in Seattle, and each one of them had their own community council. And so the community councils were being taught that they were no longer going to be identifying the problems, because they'd spent the 80s and the 90s perfecting POP, which is problem-oriented policing tactics, where they identify the drug houses, they identify the criminal element and hot spots and where they meet, and they did TV shows about this too. So everybody was kind of aware of it, but then they shifted and said, now that we've identified all the problems, we're going to start identifying, we're going to go more positive about this, and we're going to identify the assets. And they were doing interviews and finding out what people had, what their capabilities were, what they owned, what their dreams, visions, what their affiliations were, how they voted, everything. They wanted all the information about the people in the community, and they would use that word so loosely that everyone thought that they knew what they meant. But when they say community, I think of all the things that are going on here, the main thing we need to know is when they say community, they mean their community, their elite communitarian community groups that are implementing all the pieces of the plans. And that's the same in every country in the world. They come in as community developers. We're going to rebuild community, which the question always needs to be, what was wrong with the one before? What happened to the old community that we thought we had? And it's in the language. It's a war on words. They twist those words around. They take words that we think we understand and use them to identify themselves as a better option or the solution, which is what they really think they are, to all of the moral, social, and political problems that every country has. They're going to shore it up with this whole new program, and it is all asset-based community development. So that was really interesting to hear you say that, Greg, because that one of their key terms.
It is all word salad, isn't it?
Yes. We're going to build back better, folks. That's the latest one, isn't it? Everyone seems to jump on board that. We're going to have to build back better. That's what Biden's saying, and Boris Johnson saying. All these leaders around the world are jumping on board that mantra now. Build back better, which is the new community, basically, you know?
So when it comes to economic development, we have to be aware that there has been so much standardized around the world with these various occupational professional groups. One example of a communitarian organization is the American Planning Association. And there was a man named Christopher Alexander that served as a consultant with the American Planning Association for many years. And if the listeners want to just look up this man named Christopher Alexander, they're going to learn a lot. He was actually behind, he's an architect by training and profession, but he was actually behind the architecture of the World Wide Web and the Internet, pattern language, so-called. But this is true. We talk about policing, too, and police law enforcement around the world, because you know, we've had the COPS programs, and which Nikki's written about extensively and researched, and community-oriented policing services. But we also have standards and practices, policies and procedures that have been formally brought together and harmonized, shall we say, around the world. And a lot of this is occurring, we don't even realize it. And so it's safe to say that communitarianism and communitarian law enforcement, call it code enforcement even, or other types of municipal land use enforcement, if you will. And then you realize that communitarianism touches every single human being on this planet, and especially every occupational and trade professional group that you can think of.
Indeed.
Well, I haven't heard of that guy.
Look him up. Christopher Alexander. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Another guy.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Nikki.
There's another guy that you can look up too. His name is, what's his name? Anthony Judge. Now that's a character. He is actually a collaborator with this Robert David Steele, I want to say, this guy that used to be with the CIA, but you know how it is. Once you're with the company, you're always with the company. Anyway, look up Anthony Judge.
Henry Kissinger's old, shall we say, he was the aide to the general who was the cherry marine. Kathy Brakes talked about.
Mm-hmm. Anthony Judge is what I would call a consummate wordsmith in the English language. He goes way beyond the linguists, you know, that have attached themselves to the political parties, you know, the pollsters and the like. His name is spelled just like here come the judge, Anthony Judge. I call him the king of the syndicalists, because this guy is going to talk his way into your life, and he's a futurist and a utopian socialist, 100 par excellence.
Right, and they quote, it just sounds so good that it's really hard for the common person like me. I mean, I know everybody looks at my work, and it's very difficult for them to understand. But I was a bartender by trade, you know, a musician. So when I started looking this stuff up, and I realized I had to know what the words meant, and I was asking the Seattle government that was putting these words inside these new laws, these new code enforcement that they were doing, it was all to take our houses and our land. And I knew the bottom line because that was pretty obvious. But how they were doing it was just so slick. And they were using words like, you know, quality of life. And I'd say, well, how can you do this to the people in this neighborhood? And they'd say, well, it's a livability issue. And I was like, I have no problem saying, I don't know what that means. So when you are talking to them in your small town or big city in your small neighborhood, they have got this language down, and now they've had 20 years. I think I helped them, you know, fill in some of their gaps too, because they couldn't answer any of my questions. So now they're better at it, okay? But it's still total BS. They don't really have a definition for livability. They don't have a definition for community. They don't have a definition for quality of life.
Yeah. So you have to ask them the statute that has the definition of the words they're using. Bog them down with their own words. I'll say, excuse me, could you provide me the statute with the definition clause of the words you're using? Because you're not speaking the common language.
Exactly.
Until you speak the common language, we're not communicating, so you can stuff it in your hat.
Right, well, exactly. You come back at him like that. I didn't come back like that. I came back like, I just felt stupid. And one of the lines I started using in my articles when I was first writing about this was, ask your stupid questions, America, because those are the right ones to ask. However stupid you feel, that means you're getting it, okay? It means that if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense.
That's right, John.
That's right.
You know, I studied for a few years thinking that I might want to become a copywriter. And so language has always interested me. But I like to put it this way. They have to engineer the buy-in so that the slaves may implement the vision. And so they do this with language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're all being soft soaped to death.
Well, they have the whole shaming ideology behind it, too. They know how to shame. Well, everyone knows what it means. You don't? Okay. Then you feel like, wow, what did I miss? Okay, I must be stupid because, no, I never even heard that word. It's like the word communitarian itself. Most people haven't heard it, or if they did, it didn't register as anything they needed to learn about or know about. I couldn't pronounce it properly for the first 6 months. I called it command humanitarian. You know, I couldn't spell it. I'm writing articles about it and misspelling it, and my daughter's catching all my typos. This is how she became my editor, actually, because I was so mad. I knew that these people were lying, but I couldn't finger it. You know, I couldn't, like, say how they were lying, but what they were doing was destroying the neighborhood that I lived in with their new regulations, codes, and their new moral stance was that we were pigs and trash because we weren't them, and that was that. You know, years later, when I started realizing how dismissive they were, that's part of my initial anger that kind of drove me for a couple of years. How dare you talk to us like that? You know, and now they're like really good at shaming. I mean, this COVID stuff has brought it to a level that even I can hardly stand it. I can hardly stand listening to how they manipulate people into thinking that they're wrong when they know they're not. But they're going along with it because they don't have the tools or the skills or the verbal ability to fight back besides fuck you, you know? I don't know if you can say that on your show, but, you know, that's...
Yeah. The odd one, man.
Is there an edit button or whatever, you know? But, yeah, because that's where you... And the average person, that's where you get all frustrated and just say, get the hell out of here. That's what I was saying. Stay out of my house. Get out of my yard. Get off my street. We're done here, you know? Yeah. And then they were like, whatever, ha-ha, you know? Yeah. Like, I had no authority, but as it turned out, I did. I had the authority. We do have the authority. And I don't know what all the countries in the world have, but I think that people have a lot more authority over where they live than they realize.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so,
sorry, Greg, you carry on, then we bring Brian and Jenny in afterwards, so I will let them speak up. Sorry, Greg.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you.
No. So this is Brian and Jenna, and we were going to go around the table about the election. I think I would say that the Native Americans used to stake their enemies out, and over the course of days in the sun, watch them die, and that would include skinning alive, if necessary, for a few chuckles, and bleeding them to death. A hoax train, climb off of- this is what is going on right now. Breiser's had Dr. Martin Paul on before, and he is pretty certain that you can wear out human beings, especially with all the poison that is in our world, and eventually they will just throw up their hands or pitchforks and torches. I think this is the process that is going on. And what I've caught from Greg's website is he linked to a dark journalist interviewing Catherine Austin Fitz, where she said, look, they can't pay for the pensions and insurance because they stole the money. So the accountability on that, they have to create the Black Lives Matter West Coast goings on right now so that we become regions. And I'm living in Washington State with You know, I swear Governor Inslee thinks he's the president and has been for years. It's like a catfight with him and Trump. He's already declared himself California, Oregon, and Washington's climate change president. So I think what Greg put up is real with this Catherine Austin Fitz, who, don't confuse me thinking this woman is said nothing but perfect things every time she opens her mouth. She's been targeted. She has to mind her P's and Q's. But I think possibly Greg could put up that website of his where he links to Catherine so that people have an understanding of that. I think Nikki split out.
She articulates it. Catherine Austin just articulates the problem very well. You know, being in the belly of the beast, when you're in finance, you realize this is all these people do is scheme how to steal money. And then on the other side of it, how to get away with it. And communitarian's a perfect way to get away with it. You get people distracted off thinking it's something else. In the meantime, these people are setting themselves up to not really need any type of productivity for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
In 2000, Catherine told me in an email, I had an email exchange with her. I can't remember how I found her. I think through Mike Rupert, Voice from the Wilderness. He was the cop that exposed the CIA drug connections in L.A. Mm-hmm. And he was friends with Catherine at the time. This is right as she was starting up her Solari banking thing, which I didn't understand exactly how any of that worked because I have no financial background. But she told me that the most important thing, she told me I was in a very dangerous position and I was doing very dangerous work. And I was so mad, I didn't care if it was dangerous or not. I was doing it anyway. And she said the best thing that I could do was to make everything I found public, that it would be harder for them to deal with me if I did it that way. So we created the ACL website, and it was over 10,000 pages. It was insane what I put on that website. People were like, oh, no, you know. It ended up being like a library, you know. But I'm really glad just for that small exchange that I had with her because she already had been through what she was going through when she left Wall Street. And her position, she was in the Reagan administration, wasn't she? She was up there. I think she was HUD. Was she HUD?
Yeah, she was assistant HUD secretary or something.
Yeah. So she'd already been in the belly of the beast for a long time. Well, I call it that. I didn't call it that before. But there have been certain people, and so she's one of them. And I got a lot of good information from her. A lot of it, though, I have to say, was over my head. You know, I just don't. I don't have any money, so I don't care about it.
What I try to let people know is that it's always about money. It's always about power. And while they like to get certain people confused to play this like, okay, we're going to have this, you know, really draconian thing. On the other hand, it's really just an escape clause that they're trying. And they don't want, they've planned this out for so long and so carefully. They have war gamed this scenario, you know, every nuance, and this is how you deal with it. And we've just been caught flat-footed. We don't know how to deal with them with the language. And, you know, like when you're speaking to somebody talking these word salad terms, tell them to provide the statute with that has the definitions to their words.
They can't. And they get very upset.
Well,
true. And, you know, you can't catch them that way. That is the way. For me, that's what worked, okay? That's how I got them to... Well, what they wanted to do, though, was they were ready. This is they started making deals with me and saying that none of the inspectors would come to my house, that none of the things that they were doing to everybody else in the neighborhood was going to happen at my house. And they thought that I would go for that. Like, that's why I was doing it, because it was all about me and my house. And I just went, I'm a patriot's daughter. I'm sorry. It's about the whole neighborhood. It's about the whole country. It's about the whole world. You're not just doing this to me, you know? Why would I go along with that? But they will also come along. I've been offered grant funding to work with the Department of Justice and their Compass program, and that was community mapping and planning for safety strategies program, because it's they gather all the data. It's all data-driven. They get all the information they can, and then they make their plans. And they say that the community agreed, because they did. Their little community agreed that this was the plan, and nobody in the neighborhood or the town or the city or the state or the new region, because they have that all laid out. You're right about the regional stuff. It's like 9 of them, I think. And no more states, which eliminates your state constitutions entirely, which we're not supposed to even know that we're state citizens, not U.S. citizens. There's a lot of tricks they do with that, because your state law is the one that it was state law that protected me in Washington. Washington has a fabulous constitution. Alaskan sucks, because it was I think it was written by communitarian influenced people. But, you know, there's a few places where you still have a real constitution. You have a real contract with this government, and they're violating it. And you call them on that, and then they start backpedaling and doing what they can. And it's usually they try to buy you off. I was insulted by all their offers. And I'm a poor person. I mean, now I'm really poor, because once you, you know, go down the path that I did, there's no jobs available to people like me. You Google my name and, you know, that's it. You don't want nothing to do with me, you know? So I had to learn how to live very frugally and not need what they offer. Not that I ever anticipated it, but I did look back on it and go, how stupid was I? Why didn't I take that grant? Why do I care so much? You know, nobody else seems to care. But now that we're here and it's happening, you know, the year of 2020 was a key word in all the documents I was reading in 2000. That's why we called our book 2020 Our Common Destiny, because they said it was by 2020, all these things would be in place. And it looked like it wasn't going to happen. And then 2020 comes and whoa,
yeah.
It all happens under the pretense of this pandemic. And it's happening fast, and it's getting worse. I mean, now they're trying to get Alaska to make a mask mandate for the entire state, you know. So now that the election's over, because it was dominating everybody up here, I know it was pretty intense. You know, and we had a lot of people, you know, I don't know, probably Texas too, huh, Lark, with people riding around in their trucks with flags and guns and, you know.
Oh, there's a lot of flags.
People in their masks. Yeah.
Flags are out for the election, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point that I realize that I'm surrounded by zombies and criminals, and I'm operating behind them in enemy lines more and more. All I can think of is, how can I escape this madness?
Well, yeah, people, there are opportunities. Nothing seems to work in waking up the masses. Hopefully, I'm working with Robert Kennedy's organization now to wake up doctors to get, you know, because in Europe it led to successful protests there. But how it goes in the United States goes the rest of the world. So it's definitely, these are challenging times. Who knows if we're going to succeed or not, but you got to fight till the end.
Yeah, I think the disappointing thing.
Can somebody answer a question? Oh,
sorry.
I just want to know, why is it the U.S.? Why is it what we do that is going to turn the tide? I keep hearing that. I'm just curious. Why?
Well, because we represent the big stick in the neighborhood. All right. We have the power of our printing press, okay, because we're the world's reserve currency. We have the biggest, baddest military in the world, so we still have the biggest, baddest military. So it's how we go. If they get us to fall off the cliff, then nobody will be able to rise up anywhere to stop what they would really, well, to stop these people from instituting a completely draconian situation on us. You know, It's really okay. Dependent on everybody here in the United States not falling for the, breaking up the United States into various regions would be the biggest mistake. It would validate or invalid, all the contracts would become invalid.
Right.
Again, in order for them to hypothecate our economy, to pay everybody their Social Security benefits, to meet their contractual obligation, they would have to repatriate at least $20 trillion back into the United States. So if you've ever seen the movie Goodfellas before, right? Yeah. The scene where Henry Hill is talking about Jimmy O'Connell pulls off the Lufthansa heist. And all of the crew that were involved in the heist, he started whacking them. He started killing them. And the thing was, he's saying, Jimmy had the money, but he'd rather whack his crew than pay them. And that's how they look at us. They look at us as if you're alive, if you're breathing, you're going to get a benefit someday. Yeah, you're better off dead. We'll get rid of you. And then we'll cause this revolution. And then we'll sell everybody on the idea that you could have a cohesive society through this communitarian model. It's completely bogus. But because they go, hey, whatever I don't have to, whatever that of that $20 trillion that I don't have to put back in the pot, I get to keep. They're on a mission to wipe at least half of us off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And then replace us with the Chinese or, because what I'm seeing is as people are folding and losing their homes and their businesses, outside money's coming in and buying it up. And
real estate is the number one way of washing illicit money, drug,
I might add to Nikki's question is that there are a number of countries in Europe, if you put a certain HOLA word in a sentence with another word, you go to prison for years. We in the United States have our own form of censorship. You will be attacked, but it's not, this is kind of the last bastion of free speech to a very limited degree, but that is why people say if somebody in the U.S. doesn't get off their duffer, we're not going to make any headway because the rest of the world, Australia, Canada, are these not crown countries? So kind of what I'd like to throw in, and I'm sure Breiser has a few other roundtable questions, but realistically, if you want to, before somebody else starts an opposition to your plan, why don't you lead the opposition? I think this is what we're running into in a wide variety of situations. I grabbed a link from charism.blogspot.mammies, and it was the second wave documentary. What is the word these people are not talking about? There is the subject they are talking about, which is exactly what Nikki has been beating her head against the wall in Lark for 15 years. Nikki was on Rents until Rents, cut her loose. I think the controlled opposition is where we need to focus on, especially that second wave documentary. Just listen to it if you are even remotely aware of Nikki and Lark's work, and you will see the fourth industrial revolution, the great reset, stakeholder capitalism. These things, Breiser called me up and said, Brian, I think this is communitarianism. I never heard of most of it. I couldn't comment, but looking into it, yeah, I'm putting two and two together and saying, why are these internet gurus not using this word and beating around the bush? So I wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, correct. Because I said I'd never heard of the word until I heard Nikki, I think it was on Jeff Rentz, talking about it. And what she said made sense. It, you know, clicked with me in a way. I thought, yeah, this is interesting stuff. But I needed to know more, and I knew, you know, I started finding out a bit more, and I could see it developing. And I left it for a while. I didn't, you know, I didn't kind of put it on the shelf for a bit. But then I came back to it because it became more and more obvious, particularly in the last year or two. And that's what I've been hearing. You know, having Lark back on again and that. And now it's just so blatant in your face. It's like, as you said, the difficulty is trying to explain this to people because the word, as you said, Nikki, it is a mouthful. Okay, it's a hard one to explain. Well, it's all about the community, but everyone wants to live in a nice community, don't they? And they want to live in a nice, clean community, you know, environmentally friendly and all that. That's what people like.
Just accuse them of being communopathic or something and throw them off.
You know, what's interesting to note, y'all, is, you know, Nikki was last interviewed by Jeff Rentz in, I think, 2008. And correct me if I'm mistaken, but, I mean, that's 12 years ago. And
I have to tell you,
I called into that broadcast when one of those rare occasions when DV Kid insisted that Jeff take audience questions or comments. And that's something that's almost unheard of on the Jeff Rentz show. It's usually just about a dialogue, generally speaking. But I called in and I mentioned your name and your work, Nikki. DV was well familiar with it. And I think I also mentioned Jerry Lynn Ball, who says she knew personally. She met her. Yeah. Lives near her mother in California, if she's still alive. But be that as it may, she insisted, DV, that Jeff gets you back on the air right away, get in touch with you. And I thought that was pretty telling. And so this is something that I did 2 years ago. But obviously, it didn't happen.
Well, what happened with me and the whole radio thing, which I'm just now agreeing to do this again, was the people that were interviewing me, they hadn't had an opportunity to really see what the hell I was talking about. So it felt like, and I don't have sound bites. I'm not a radio person. I'm not very good at marketing myself or my work. And I was trying to explain it in a different way every time I talked to someone, because I was trying to find the way that would, you know, hit different people with some kind of, you know, flashbulb moment. Oh, okay. That's what she's talking about, you know, where, I just couldn't find the right words. And even today, I stressed over this last night. I was like, I don't know what to say any different than what I've already said in so many different ways. I did a few videos, and then I never did a podcast because I'm not that technical savvy. And I live off grid. So, you know, I'm limited in what I can do electronically, you know, pretty much. But we're getting it set up, and now I have a phone that's working right now, and I can talk to people. But now I'm actually a little bit more willing to talk about it, a lot more willing to talk about it, because people are seeing it right in their face, and all you have to do is explain a little bit of it, maybe, and they go, I know what you're talking about. They're doing that in my town. Or I was at a meeting where they said some of that stuff. So the time is right. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen now, when a lot of people, they don't know what they're seeing, and they really do appreciate it. I've gotten thousands of emails from people thanking me just for giving them a word that they could understand that that's what it is. Because they've seen it. Some people have seen it for longer than I've done the research. They knew something like this was going on, but they couldn't put their finger on it. And so why don't all these people like Tom DeWeese and, you know, the JDS creeps. I don't like those people. But, you know, they do have a big audience, okay? And they're behind Rosa Corey and the Tea Party and all these other organizations that I thought back in 2012 were going to jump on it and run with it. And what they did was jump on it, run with it, and squash it. And
that's
they told
exactly
me
right.
to stop using... Yep, and they told me to stop using the word. It was too confusing for people. And I said, well, you know, I can't help it that it's confusing, but that they don't know what it is. You know, like now Patrick Wood and this whole technocracy thing. Yes, technocracy is definitely a part of it, but this is not a technocratic society we're building. It's a communitarian society. It has a philosophy, and it has a system of law. The technocrats are going to run it for the communitarians. They are communitarians. And to not give them that last piece, they don't know what they're fighting. We're fighting an invisible enemy because we don't know who they are. And I've been telling people this is who they are, and I'm nobody, you know? They don't So I didn't do a very good job of it, all right? I felt very over my head. You know, like I was drowning in this information. And I approached the New York Times, Carl Kaplan there, and one of the departments, I can't remember what he was editor of, they asked for my information. I sent out binders. I sent out articles. I was offering to write the story for people and let them rewrite it and put their name on it. We've been plagiarized a lot, and I just started letting that go. Until I realized the people that were plagiarizing us were taking out key elements of the theory, like it's Amitai Etzioni, our guru from Zion, and the tie to Zionism, militant Zionism, and the Kabbalah, and all of the weird, mystical, alchemical, you know, magical stuff that is going on, that I didn't know anything about that stuff, okay? I didn't know what the Talmudic law was or how important it was for me to learn Talmudic law so that I could understand communitarian law, and that communitarian law is European Union law, or that it was communitarianism from the very beginning with Monet and Schumann back in the 50s. So, you know, the pieces, I thought Europe would be all over it because they were under EU mandates, and that they would see the communitarianism was used as a word. It's actually aquas communitaire. It is statute at Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. All the case law for environmental law is called communitarian law. So it's out there. It's been a big part of certain segments, but the average person doesn't study EU law and or read the European Constitution, you know. I get that now, okay? At the time, I thought they would, but no, you know.
Yeah, like so, I'll just tell you, Nikki, the Lisbon Treaty, which was passed in 2008, which Ireland, by the way, didn't say no to, but we had to vote again, you know. To get the right answer, but there's something like about 20,000 pages in that document, that Lisbon Treaty, you know?
20,000?
So, something like that, yeah. It's crazy. How are people going to read through that? But, you know, but you could just see by the stuff that they were coming out with that this was a takeover. This was a European, an empire, if you want to call it that, but all the countries in Europe were just, all their constitutions don't mean anything anymore. It's the European Lisbon Treaty. That's the new European constitution.
Yeah,
and that's overriding everything. And all it made sense, like, when I started looking at that a bit more, it's totally communitarian. And the law comes from that, too. Because here, like, in Ireland and Britain, we still have a kind of common law jurisdiction, so to speak, but that's, you know, like innocent until proven guilty, but that's all been pushed to one side now. You know, very, very carefully being pushed to one side. More or less, if you walk into a courtroom now, you're guilty. That's the
right.
Way
well, we know what they used to. They told me at one of the meetings when I asked them about due process, and they go, "What do you mean?" I go, "Well, suppose someone who gets this ticket doesn't think they committed the crime." You know, I go, "Remember, innocent until proven guilty." And this lawyer looked me right in the face and said, "Oh, only guilty people will get these tickets.
Yeah.
Don't worry."
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, American law has been totally turned on its head. There's just no question. And I've been looking for several years at the machinations in the law schools and what's happening in the courts. And, I mean, I was just astonished. You know, it really kind of starts in the law schools, and then it continues outward. Control of the universities, you know, and, you know, the courts are all privatized today. Yeah, so they're for profit. I mean, it's only about the Benjamins here, you know. And no one gives a damn about, frankly, American law anymore because they all want to get along. These people only learn about the rules of court, the rules of evidence, the rules of criminal civil procedure. They learn about stare decisis in case law, and they turn these bastards out on the street, and all they can think about is, you know, I need to get my mansion as rapidly as possible. I got to put my other kids through university. And I've suffered. And it's just like the lawyer, it's just like the doctors.
Yeah.
These people have all been weaponized against us.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, have, yeah.
And that's really what a communitarian is. And when you ask them, well, what do you do for a living? You know damn well if they're a communitarian or not immediately just by what they do for a living. Because people don't realize that when they become connected to any kind of a collectivist organization, whether it's a trade union or a professional union. I mean, you look at syndicalist trade associations or professional business associations like the National Governors Associations, you know, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, you know,
exactly.
Republican National Committee. There are thousands of these. It doesn't matter what occupational trade group that you are associated with. And they're all communitarians. We're literally becoming communitarians. We're being socially engineered to be communitarians. This is what's happening.
Yep.
Yeah, and shamed if we're not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's their favorite. It's not even like I remember when I was first doing the work and I was looking all over the web at all these different groups that were saying that they were going to put us all in gulags and camps, and that could very well happen. I have no idea. But I, at the time, was like, it's not about putting us in gulags and camps. If we become the gulag, you know, if we censor our own neighbors, our own family, and not allow them to talk about anything that's relevant, because it's all relevant. If you have questions, it's relevant. If you don't know something, we don't, you know, the idea that if someone doesn't know something, that makes them stupid, that's wrong. You know, that's always been wrong. If they don't know something, tell them or help them find the information. That was what I was like. People were like, I can't believe how many times you say you don't know. And I said, I don't know anything. In fact, the more I studied and the more I read about communitarianism and all of the subtopics that went along with it, which were everything that I had never studied, and I thought I was a good student, was that I didn't know anything. And most of what I had learned was a lie. And that made me just feel awful, okay? So in promoting my work, to go back to the interviews, to go on the radio and tell people we've been lied to, don't trust anybody with any kind of a thing in front of their name or anyone who's the director or the CEO or anything like that, you know, because they have an agenda that you don't know anything about. I wasn't saying fight them. I was just saying don't trust them. And when they open their mouth and they start talking to you and you can't understand what they're saying, it's not a good thing. They're talking over your head. They're not trying to communicate with you. They're not simplifying it. And then people wanted me to simplify this complex crap that they write and put it in words that people could understand. And I was incapable. I don't know how to discuss it really without using their language. They set it up that way so that I sound like I'm talking over everybody's head. It was just very frustrating.
Now, let's not forget that the Department of Homeland Security hired as their consultants, two of many, people like Evgeny Primakov and Marcus Wolf, East German Stasi. So yeah, we have when you talk about shaming, you know, that's what's going on. You know, we've actually been socially engineered to be communitarians, and you know, the people that I have a disdain for. It's funny. Back in the 80s, I used to hate yuppies. Maybe you remember that. Graham would remember that. But yeah, I hated
yuppies. Those things. Yeah.
I hated yuppies with a passion back in the 80s. Yeah. And I was on the West Coast in those years. But today, I hate the technologists, the techies. And today at my house, I had the nice man, 26 years old. He grew up in a privileged home. He could do anything he wanted to do with his life. But the man liked to work on cars, and he liked electronics. And this is just a nice young man that basically was bred to be a techie. And the world is being overrun by techies because, you know, I suggest that these GRIN technologies, so-called, the acronym stands for genetics, robotics, information, and nanotech. This is going to be the end of us because we are enamored with these things. You know, innovation, innovate or die. This is the watchword with all these techies today. And at the end of the day, you know, these all these scientists, whether you call them life sciences, scientists, physical scientists, or social scientists, they all got a seat at the table. And it just, it's but, you know, and then
there
science
is dissent
today,
among the ranks, though, Lark. There is dissent. I've been exposed to more people who have the technical background, who are seeing how they've been used. They are opting out of the system. Some of them are very depressed. Others are just trying different things, walking away from that and reassessing everything in their life right now.
Well, that's
and
a, good,
a lot of
that's
them
good.
In their,
that's all good.
In their 30s. And what's interesting is that, you know, when people go from being immersed in the technology and they step back from the technology, what do they want to do? They want to go camping. They want to chop wood. They want to haul their own water. They want to fix the generator. They want to build something they can live in. They get simplify everything and just put it right where I put it. This is what I had to do for myself. Once I realized what the system was building and setting up and trying to lure me into a subsidized apartment and a subsidized job and a subsidized car. And, you know, I'd get all my, I'd have high speed internet. I'd have all these things. And so when I turned my back on it and I went to the woods because I was raised camping and I just never left, basically. Okay. I got to a place with myself where I could take care of me and I am responsible for all my daily needs with my team, okay, because it's really hard to do it alone, and why would you do that? I am creating community in my own way with my family, with friends who have the same moral stance that we have, which is they don't want to be part of it, but they don't know exactly, none of us know what we want to be part of in the future, you know? What kind of a future do we want to have? All we know is we don't want to be part of that. And it does make you look like a wacko. Okay, I've had people for years go, you live in tents? I go, well, they're yurts. You know, they're not exactly tents. But, you know, I own them. I build them. I built this teepee. You know, I'm sitting in a teepee right now, and it's maybe 20 degrees outside, and we're fine. Very comfortable. You can do a lot without taking from the system. And I think turning your back on the system is really hard. Most people won't be able to do it. But if they don't do it, then you can't even have one toe in this system without them sucking you right in with a, you know, they got you. So I see that. I see that in people wanting out. I have a lot of people asking me, what can we do and where can we go? And where you can go is right where you are right now. And you take a stand wherever you are, and you defend it to the best of your ability. with whatever knowledge you have, you know, and it might not even be that much, but it's enough that you stand up to it at some level and some point, and you have to make, it's a choice. It's like, I'm not an Atlas Shrugged fan anymore, Ayn Rand or any of that, but I do know that it's about choice, and the choice is happening right now. Are you going to help them destroy the world, or are you going to protect what you know is real?
That's it. Yeah, folks, I'll tell you what we do. We've just gone over the hour. I just didn't realize the time. It just flew past. We're just gone on the hour mark. We take a break now for a couple of minutes, a music break, and we'll talk more after this, because there's a very interesting discussion going on here, folks. So, we'll be back to you now in about, 3 or 4 minutes. So we'll talk to you after this. Okay, welcome back, everybody. This is Prizer here on The Brightest Show, and we have a great roundtable chat going on. We're talking everything communitarian. I know we talked about this a lot in our shows, but we have some very special guests on tonight because the agenda is now right clear in front of our eyes. If you can't see it, folks, now it's, I don't know, you just have to start thinking really hard about it because it's there. It's right there in front of us. We got Nikki Rapana joining us from Alaska. Nikki, I think, pretty much brought most of us to the attention of this world, and we've been looking into it ever since, and it's been great that Nikki's been doing it, and great that she's back out talking about it now. We've also got Lark in Texas, again, who's also followed up in Nikki's footsteps, more or less, and kept the whole conversation going. And again, you know, the two of these guys, they've done, you know, sterling work. I mean, the research they've done is quite amazing, so kudos to two of them. We got Brian and Jenna over there in Washington State, and they're well aware of the whole communitarian agenda, and they're pretty much like Nikki, pretty much off the grid, doing their own thing, growing their own food, and they're big into the whole biochar and all that stuff. So, and then we also have Greg join us as well, Greg Quanones. Greg, by the way, you say you have got a website there. Do you want to drop that in, or let us know, and then just drop it into the chat here, and I can share it at the chat room. Is it Greg there?
I'm here.
I'm here.
Oh, sorry, Greg. Yeah, you're back. Oh. Yeah, just saying, Greg, you have a website. Do you want to tell us what that is, and then I can share it. Just tell us, and I can share it then in the chat. Greg? Is there? Oh, I don't know. I don't know if Greg's still back with us, is he?
He might still be out.
Greg, he's on mute, by the looks of it. I'm just seeing here. So, I just want to unmute Greg if you can hear us. But anyway, we'll carry on. When Greg comes back, we'll get that out. We'll get that information out to people. So, yeah, let's just talk about what's going on now. I mean, you know, looking at Nikki, as you said, 2020 was going to be a big year, and you saw it back in the year 2000. And, you know, we all know about Agenda 2030, so we knew something was coming down the tracks. And I remember even I did my first radio show of 2020, and I knew 2020 was going to be a significant year. But, I mean, it's incredible what's happened with this whole scandemic and everything that's happened. And again, it's so blatant with the communitarian agenda with this, you know, I'm hearing all the language, as you say, we're all in this together. We all have to stand strong through this, you know, let's pull together and we'll defeat this virus and blah, 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 blah. And that's why you've got to lock down. That's why you got to socially distance and isolate and all this stuff. And I'm just so surprised how people fell for this so easily, you know, and it just played right into their agenda, and it seems to be working pretty well. Now, there is pushback, but is it enough? Can we do something here? I don't know. It's I said I'm seeing some good things. I'm seeing a lot of people now saying enough of this, enough of the lies. Let's explain yourself, government. Explain yourself, health authorities. Come on, because it's not adding up. You know, I mean, we know there's a bigger agenda here, but for the ordinary folks out there, though, they can see the lie. They just don't understand the bigger agenda. And then I just say to people, well, if you really want to know what's going on, check out, go to the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset. That's a good start. You can at least start there and read that, and you can see exactly what they're talking about. And the first thing they're saying is in 2030, you won't own anything, but you'll be happy. Well, that's great, isn't it? So.
No, they want to strip us of our right to privacy and our rights to ownership of property. And that includes the property that is between your two ears and inside your own skin. So make no mistake, we're talking about a totalitarian system that is, I call it techno-slavery. It's technological slavery. And we're being warred upon. And that is, they have a depopulation agenda. And we have to understand that it's synonymous with total war, but it's all those types of war that you don't normally associate with war or warfare or being warred upon, like non-linear warfare. You can do a search for that on the internet, on YouTube. Non-linear warfare, a new system of political control. 7 or 8 minutes, time well invested. But there's also economic warfare, which Greg speaks to. You know, there's biological warfare. I mean, they have literally weaponized our best and brightest against us. The people with the credentials, the careerists. You know, I used to liken it to the guy that drives the truck loaded with fluoride to the water treatment plants. I mean, he's a good citizen, you know. He votes. He makes his mortgage payments on time. His kids are well-behaved. And he doesn't cheat on his wife. But, I mean, this is what happens. I mean, everything that happens out of these medical schools today, I mean, these people are being traumatized. It's basically trauma-based mind control, what they're doing to the best and the brightest among us. And everybody that wants, that has skin in the game, that wants to be successful and so forth and so on, like all of us have been driven to do in our lives, these are the people that are being, they're the ones leading the charge. In fact, it was John Maynard Keynes in an address before Harvard University, post-World War II, that said that the Marxian socialists had it all wrong because they appealed to the laboring classes, the wage slaves, you know, the people that didn't have the best educations. But the Fabian socialists had it all right because they were going to appeal to the sons and daughters and wives of the prominent and the well-to-do. And this is exactly what they've done. So the most brainwashed people in our societies today around the world are the people that we look up to because they're handsome or they're beautiful or they seem so smart. They're very glib. They've got fantastic careers. They make lots of money. They've got a beautiful home. They drive nice cars. And the American people, just like the Irish people and the English people and people around the world, they quit thinking for themselves a long time ago because we were socially engineered in the schools. It's been happening a long time. We were fed lies about our history, you know, whether it's our nationalist history. And let's face it, today, nationalists and patriots are dirty words. I remember when I first got involved in politics for the first time in my life, because I was always apolitical. This was during the so-called Ron Paul love revolution back in 2008 and 12, I believe. And I mean, I could write a book about my experiences at that time. But the only people that were organizing were people that, you know, had something to sell. They were network marketers. They were selling gold and silver, you know. I looked at the background of these people, you know, I looked them up. One guy went to a small Midwestern college. He had 6 children. He was knocking down about $175,000 a year. And he was a data collector for big department stores, retail chains. He had a pretty good job. And he, the mission statement at the college he went to described in really a very short paragraph, world citizens and change agents. And I'm going, what the hell? And at that time, I was well immersed into studying Nikki's research, and then signing up for things like Google Alerts, so that anytime somebody wrote anything using that word communitarian or communitarianism, I would get something fed into my inbox. And I mean, I was just blown away, just like Nikki was. And I couldn't believe nobody was talking about this, because the information is not exactly hidden, just like at the World Economic Forum website. There are thousands of these websites that are devoted to global governance, world citizens, change agents. And, you know, this so-called rule of law that Americans, for instance, are brought up believing that we have, you know, say, as supposedly enshrined in our Bill of Rights, all of these are going away. Mm-hmm. All of them. And the young people today don't give a damn about our history. They don't read. They don't learn anything about the Constitution or anything like that in school. And they just don't give a damn.
Well, the whole problem that I found, too, is that our entire system, our legal system, is based in property. Depending on the crime that you commit is how much damage you did to someone's property, and that's criminal court and civil court. So when the Marxist ideology of no property rights, that ends America right there. That ends any country that bases their liberty in owning themselves or the house that they live in or the products that they make, by taking property out of it. So for the Great Reset, when they're saying you won't own anything, you know, that is so obvious to anyone who understands the basic principles of the American justice system and the entire country. And that's why so many people, I think, are getting it, because now, like, they're trying to say, you can only have 10 people in your house over Thanksgiving, okay? They're limiting the number you can even have for your holiday supper. And people are going, this is my house. I make the payments on this house. No government gets to tell me how many people or who I can have and who I can't have in my house. So it always comes back to that. This is mine. And if we don't hold on to that, then we have nothing. If you don't own anything, then you have no leg to stand on anywhere, as far as I can see.
Yeah. Let's bring Greg back in again. Greg, you do have a website, do you? Do you want to share that with us? And we can at least people have to check you out.
Yes, so, well, my business website is livewellaps.com.
Right.
And we work with doctors. We're a healthcare consulting firm.
Okay.
And we're totally focused right now on getting doctors to stand up, defend the scientific method, and say no to the faulty PCR testing that's causing all this, you know, this, let's say, this crisis that we're going through right now. Uh-huh. And it's the Achilles heel of the system right now. They think they have the doctors in lockstep. They do with the corporate and the hospital doctors. Yeah. But there are still millions of private practitioners out there, you know, chiropractors, dentists, pediatricians, gynecologists, dermatologists, you know, you run the gamut. There's hundreds of those varieties out there. And this new reset, there's no place for private practitioners in this new reset.
Right.
So we like to explain to them is like, look, they've been playing musical chairs with you for a long time. The music is about to stop in another probably 36 months. And when it does, unless you stand up now and say no to this and start, you know, coming out of this fog that you're in, because they started corrupting medicine 100 years ago, is one of their really strong strategic tools here. So
absolutely.
And
I do want to. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
Well, I just want to comment. This is Jenna, and Brian has sent your website to both a naturopath and a dentist in town, and it's been quiet. And my reflection on that is I looked at all the supplements on that naturopath shelf, and they had a lot of shit in it. And how deep medicine and natural healing and the separation of both have gone, I'm not surprised that neither of them, because they've incorporated so much of the technology and the pharmaceuticals to a point where there's nano crap in a naturopath shelf. So it's like he didn't listen to me years ago, and he's not going to listen to me now. So what? How that impacts me, because I'm really into like natural foods, natural medicines, and the freedom to be able to do that. And that's where it all goes back to personal will, free will, and how communitarianism is the fiction that groups or communities have rights versus the fact that individual rights is the foundation for freedom. Our friend JJ Zapp is sending us messages to underline that fact. So the way to fight communitarianism is to uphold individual rights. And the fact that people are so removed from understanding what keeps us healthy and what keeps us able to function, because the convenience foods that have been sold have so much crap in them, it's convenient and time is sped up, so people don't have time to actually cook whole foods anymore or grow a garden. And that's the line. It's like, well, I've got to go do this, I've got to pay the bills. So from my perspective, I just wanted to add in the individual right to health and understanding one's own body has to claim their time to actually understand what they need to be healthy. So I just needed to inject a little bit.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, thank you. That's a good point.
There's an interesting thing that I found not too long ago. You know that the vaccine issue has been around for well over 100 years. And there was a group of doctors that really helped slow it down through the 1920s. And it really stuck with people's minds through the Great Depression and right up until after World War II. And what they would do is they were calling doctors who were promoting vaccines, vaccinopaths. Okay. And it worked very thing. When a doctor would recommend a vaccine for a child, they would send out pamphlets to people and ask mothers, well, ask the doctor if he's suffering from vaccinopathy. Mm-hmm. And this is a doctor who is practicing and believes in vaccinopathy. He seeks to prevent cures or diseases by inflicting or inculcating the well and sick with bacterial and poisonous vaccines that are, a lot of them were made of pus back in those days. And it worked. So, like, we can't let a good crisis go to waste. I personally believe that these people now, their grip on things is not as tight as they had hoped. Mainly because everybody from the city managers all the way down that have been pushing this communitarian agenda, they were promised something for doing this. Okay? They're not doing this because they're altruistic or they believe that our system somehow is bad. Yeah. They're doing it because they're being told big changes are coming. This is going to, you know, there's going to be societal breakdowns and you need to push this agenda. And if you do, hey, we're going to reward you. You're going to be able to keep your big house and your car and have your cocaine and hooker parties.
Yeah.
And they buy it. They believe it. Now, some of them are starting to figure out, and I'm afraid that Trump is one of these who probably just learned that, you know, if you trust them, good luck. Because they might just pull the rug out on you in the last minute.
Yeah. I think that's what they probably do. All these politicians and healthcare workers, you know, people who are pushing this and saying we have to do all this stuff, when the time comes, they'll be stabbed in the back.
That's right.
And that'll happen, yeah.
I trust nobody wearing a power suit, a white coat, or a uniform.
There you go.
But Natalie, just again, just say, like, the pushback, like, we have it here, Graham, the producer here, his daughter, Shelley, fantastic. She a healthcare worker in the hospitals in Cornwall there, and she decides she's going to resign because she's had enough of the lies, and she made a public announcement on it, because she's well involved with activist groups, and did a speech in the middle of a town called Truro over there in Cornwall, and announced it. And it's just, it's... thing has gone viral all over the place, and I think a lot of nurses and whoever working in hospitals, even if you're working in the kitchens or whatever you're doing, are kind of saying, yeah, this is all bullshit, enough is enough. So
they're out there, and we're trying to convince more of them to, like, you know, for your honor and for the honor of what your profession once was. There was a time when doctors were looked upon with respect and adoration. Not anymore.
No. Tell them to contact me, Greg, and I'll tell them exactly what I think.
I do think, though, that the planners, all right, have considered this already. I think that they have an outcome-based scenario for any type of resistance that's going to come along. And that people who are rejecting it on principle, with these people with integrity, because it sounds like this woman from Cromwell is doing this because of her strong moral code. It's wrong. She doesn't want to participate. It's a very simple way of looking at things, and it works. But the possibility that they have a plan for how to use that resistance to further their goal is something that the longer I studied the communitarians and their continual dialectical conflicts that they set up, they use every conflict to move to a new solution. And so even if they're not controlling the opposition, they will try to, number one, they will somehow grab onto that and manipulate the people that are doing it for good reasons and take them down a path that is not where that won't help anyone or nullify them altogether. So to stand alone, even though you're affiliating with other people, like all these doctors, Craig, that you're reaching, you know, they still have to be able to be aware that they don't want to be used in a different way. I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but this is the real war is about how they can take, you know, your opposition and turn it into something that they can use, is what I'm saying. So, to be wary of people. Like, I had so many people come to us and say, oh, yes, this is such good work. You're doing such a good thing, and we want to be part of this, you know, or we want you to, you know, cause I refuse to start an organization. I refuse to tell anyone what to do. I refuse to lead in any sense of the word. And so people like Lark and people like Jenna and the hundreds and hundreds of people that I do know through this work, they all went off and did it on their own. They didn't do anything that I told them to do. They didn't join a league or association with me. Nothing like that, because that's the way it's got to be done. It has to, if it's individual liberty we're defending, it has to be done from an individual viewpoint. You can have affiliates and people that you respect, but anything more than that, and you're just a target for infiltration and misuse.
That is correct.
Yes, I think you're correct there, Nikki, too. I mean, that was even mentioned in that Rockefeller document of 2010, where they factored in that there would be a lot of opposition to this, and they were expecting it. So I think we've got to be very, very careful with that. And talking about this whole individual versus collective thing, I mean, you know, we are seeing a rise in nationalism, patriotism now, not just in America, but across the world. A lot of the nationalists are saying, you know, we need a strong collective to beat this, you know. And then there's a problem with individualism, and that leads to selfishness and ego and greed, which it does. And it's trying to find like a proper balance. But then Nashville's got to be careful too, because they could fall into the trap, couldn't they?
Well, the whole conflict ideology, the way they laid it out, it's brilliant. The reason we named ourselves the Anti-Communitarian League was because they said the final synthesis in all these conflicts they would arrive at. Now, Marx refused to identify it by name, and other people did, and so did I, that the final perfect, ultimate third way, middle ground, balanced synthesis is communitarianism. And the way that you'll know it's so perfect is it gives rise to no opposition. So I decided that if we were the Anti-Communitarian League, they had opposition, which rendered their whole thing imperfect, and they had to go away. You know, that was my thinking at the time. But it's still the same thing. It's like they are not perfect. They believe they're perfect. They want it to be sold as perfect, and they can't allow for any opposition, because if they're, then they would be stuck back in their own formula, because it's a formula for moving society forward. It's what dialectical materialism was. It was the conflict between the people of various material wealth. It was set up that way. And we're still in it, you know, so we still have to have the complex.
Reiser, I'd like to chime in. The before mentioned documentary, which I actually grabbed the link to on Mammy's, the second wave documentary at 3:40, it caught my ear because of me studying what Nikki was saying and Lark. It's a blending of communism and capitalism. And here's this UK guy in that documentary at 3:40 saying, you know, it's not capitalism versus communism. It's neoliberalism versus, I don't know, it doesn't come to me now, but I'm encouraging people to look at it and remind themselves what Spiro Soukras is saying is misleading and misdirection. And I put much effort at John Stadtmiller and RBN setting up Greg to come on and say, okay, so yeah, the whole world's gone to hell, John, but why don't we look at why the financial system had to go? And what Greg is saying on his multiple broadcasts on In Case You Missed the BS! Exclamation mark is, you know, they wanted to steal the pensions and the insurance. Well, to John Stadtmiller, that's his listeners. Those are the people sending him shekels. They don't want anybody touching their pensions and insurance. That's their security. And so in a lot of ways, they got us by the short hairs, and I just wanted to throw that in. I'm
off the mic. Yeah. Sorry, Vicky, are you been there?
Well, the vested interest that people have in the system already is so powerful, and it's like ripping their heart out.
Yeah.
And if they, so in order, what I see is a lot of people want to tell you just enough so that you'll continue to listen to them, but they don't want to tell you the part that will make you angry, or, you know, angry enough to do something different. And there's an older generation. Those are the pensioners, you know, the people that are, they have no way to live other than off this money. So it's so important that they know that it's being robbed. Absolutely. But if you can't, I don't know. It's like, how do you replace that? How do you tell someone you're being robbed, but there's nothing I can do about it? You know? Oh well. You know, so sorry. I'm sorry for you, but that doesn't mean anything to that person. And if someone else says, well, we won't rob you if you just take the vaccine or you just get the chip, or it's totally the racket extortion part of it that is really good. They're really good at that, and they do it with a smile on their face, and they make you feel like they're helping you. But basically what they're saying is, if you still want that money, here's what you have to do to keep it. And so I can't make that choice for people. I made my choice, and it was a difficult one. But now that I made it, I'm really happy, okay? I'm a happy person most of the time. And I wasn't before, you know? Trying to live in both worlds was impossible for me. But to tell people that you're going to be robbed no matter what, even if you take the chip, even if you get the vaccine, or even if you go along with everything they say, you're still going to be robbed. Is the bottom line. That's what, and like he was telling those doctors that, you know, in a few 36 months or whatever, they're going to be shutting you down. So even if you go along with it today, it doesn't save you for tomorrow. These people eat their own. They don't care.
That's right.
If you went along with it or helped them or not. And people are stuck in this idea that if I do the right thing and if I go along and I don't cause any waves, and I don't speak up, that I will be somehow safe. And that's the illusion that has to be broken.
That's
where we're safe.
That's what I'm attempting to do. I say, listen, you guys, in the middle, you know, like last year in the United States alone, there were 4.3 billion retail prescriptions filled. Okay? We have the average person. 60% of people over the age of 55 in the United States are on up to 11 prescription drugs, three of which are categorized as opiates. There's a reason that old people aren't doing anything. They're medicating. Okay?
And addicted. Addicted to those drugs. Yes.
Yeah, they're all being poisoned. They're being anesthetized. I mean, they murdered my parents. They murdered my sister. And they murdered my brother. I have zero respect for these people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They murdered my wife, too. Same thing.
Yeah.
Big problem. Oh, no problem, yeah.
Nikki, my sister was your age. My little sister, Lori. She was taking 12 different medications at the time of her death. 12. And her first exposure to the system was after she had her first child. She was given a prescription to, what is it called? I can't even think of it now, but it's
postpartum depression.
Exactly. It's a totally made up some disease, totally made up.
Right.
And that started her on the path. And every time she had an ache or a pain or wasn't feeling right, or, you know, the doctors would just hand her some more candy.
I have two brothers who are addicted to opiate drugs, prescription opiate drugs. So this has affected almost every family. It has to stop. And looking for a politician or one of these people to stop, this is just ridiculous.
Now, anyone that has a stake in they're called stakeholders too, okay? Yeah. And that's the stakeholder meetings that they have where the architects are involved and local, you know, everybody that has a stake in making money off the plan is at those meetings, and they will never walk away from it. The ones that I talked to in Seattle said stupid things to me, like, I just bought a house. What are you trying to do to me? You know, like, because I was asking questions about the program that they were implementing, I was trying to hurt them financially because they were making money off of this stuff.
These people are all participants in criminal protection rackets. End of story. And they have to be called out, whether they might be Dr. Kildare and Marcus Welby rolled into one. And those attorneys might be Perry Mason. But the result is the same. Whether you are a dupe or a shill, the result is the same. You're a communitarian and you're a member of a criminal protection racket. Sorry.
Okay, but I need to interject, Lark. My son, who is 20, in a U.S. Marine, which I see as, I've seen that the, like all the Marines, while they were in training, they were getting UN indoctrinated classes, but he is my son. And this is a feel-good story. So I'm a single parent, and this kid moved 12 times in 13 years. So that was his, with no father. He had a Brian. But just in the past week, I got a message from him. And this kid got injected with God knows how many vaccines when he went through boot camp. He was hospitalized. But this kid actually responded to me when I was saying, you know, I'm sorry you were, I had an opinion about your video game addiction and the fact that you cleared out my bank account 2 times, and I forgive you, but at the same time, I said, I'm sorry that I wasn't present to your interests, son. I still want to maintain our relationship. He responded to me just a couple days ago. He said, no, it's not that I usually respond to anyone on Facebook, because he knows he's monitored, and his cell phone. He knows he's completely monitored. Anyway, he says, I haven't spoken to my aunt, and that's my sister. She took him in when he robbed me for the second time and I didn't know what to do. I was like, if I send you to juvenile detention, I'm going to have to pay for it and I can't afford it. So I didn't go that route. My sister took him. And he said, my opinions have changed since I have left home. And after seeing how weak and pathetic the world has gotten, I have come to love and respect the way you raised me. The shit you put me through has made me who I am today and has allowed me to overcome obstacles. If I could go back, I would like to be raised like that again, over again, and if not worse. I think children should be raised in shitty situations that cause distress. There are so many spoiled brats and adults nowadays because everything is either, quote, hazing or child abuse, and it disgusts me. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Okay, are you guys crying yet? I am. Thank you for making me the man I am today. So it, I do feel good about that, and I sent him some blackberry jam in the mail, which cost me $25, which is a lot for me, but he deserves it because he doesn't get to choose what he eats. He said at one time he wants to walk around and be with his hands in his pockets, and they don't let him do that. But he's in there, and I'm thinking of all the other 20-somethings right now. And what do they have to look forward to? Because if they are not completely injected into the internet and the media that is telling them what the world is like, I don't know what they're doing. Because that's all there is. All the kids and parents right now in the mainstream have this sort of perspective of what life is like. And I object. And free will is something that needs to be reminded. Like, we all need to remind each other what free will is, because I think people are losing it. We all were born with it.
Yeah, we're all slave to our toys.
Yeah.
And it's going to get worse where it gets better. You know, there's a woman named Linda Stone on the internet, lindastone.net. And she suggests, and I know it's true, that our attention spans have gone from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. I mean, we have the attention spans today of fleas. And she has talked about something extensively. She's done TED Talks. She describes something as continuous partial attention. And quite honestly, that's what I experience in chat rooms on the internet. And that's where that's what I experience everywhere I turn. I see the language itself has been corrupted. And yet at the same time, you know, I wish sometimes that language would just go away. I wish that we were communicating telepathically, because I think we'd be better off.
I know people who agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them. I'm a very verbal person, and I'm a writer, you know, so I'm always looking for the best way to say something. It's a lot easier on paper for me than speaking, for sure. But I also, Jenna, that is so beautiful, because one of the reasons when I was in Seattle and I was like 24/7 defending my house against what I called an invasion. And when the more I learned, the crazier I sounded, because I started telling people this is a global plan. It's like, it's not just Seattle. It's not just the U.S. It's everywhere. It's 168 countries right now, and it's growing. They're getting more all the time. And they're doing an asset inventory of every country in the world. And they want all the information they can get so that they can make this big plan for this new government and this whole, you know, people are like, you're out of your mind. You've lost your cookies. Why are you doing this? And my mother, she was like, why is it your problem? Why are you taking this on by yourself like a nutcase, okay, and standing up to these people? Well, she didn't say it in those words, but she said, what are you doing this for, you know? And I said, because our kids are going to figure this shit out. And I want them to know that at least some of us tried to stop it and tried to figure out what was going on. Now that I know there's something really bad coming, I can't not say it. I can't try and do anything about it and just say, oh, well, I might as well make as much money as I can so I can retire in Costa Rica while the world goes to shit. You know, that there has to be something that they can look at, some record of resistance that's based in truth and factual information, so that they can use those tools if they're even able. I said, even if, because by the time this happens, I said, all that information is going to be gone. Everything that I was writing, we knew that. That's why we went to hard copy for at least one book, so there would be something out there besides an electronic file on the work that we were doing, so that people would know who and what they were dealing with.
You called it. You called it, and I'm so proud of you for calling it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jenna, for sharing that story. It was great. I mean, you know, through a lot of the darkness, little rays of light come in every now and again and keeps us going, you know. And I think, sadly, you know, I think we are actually consenting to all of this. That's the sad part of it. You know, if they used force, at least we can kind of look back in time and say, well, we were forced, you know, into the gulags at gunpoint. What do you do? But the sad thing about it is most people are willingly walking into this.
And trusting that the military hasn't been incorporated into this communitarian system. Because the stockholder investment, it's like they're, you know, the money and investment is based on algorithms and people's thinkings and hoping that everyone will be on board with this illusion. And a lot of the empathetic or compassionate people saying, well, we're doing it for the betterment of the world. That's the illusion they are creating. And even my son is like, well, you have to wear a mask to protect other people. And I'm like, every individual dual immunity is where we go, honey. Take your vitamin C. And he doesn't hear that, but it's true. It's like individual immunity, individual rights, individual responsibility is, it's not as easy, but that is what we need to talk about.
Yeah.
I think that we all should reread The Art of War and realize that we are in a war, and we're being warred upon. So given the facts on the ground as they exist, and we can quantify them, we can identify them quite easily if we would just have the conversations, you know, we're going to see that perhaps we need to turn the tables on them, because they've been employing the art of war upon us. We probably need to turn things around by beginning with, you know, this idea that you have to accept personal responsibility for your life, and your life counts. You are the expert. At the end of the day, what matters is what you think, how you act. And we don't need to put this on other people and say that, you know, well, this person caused me to do that, or this caused me to do that. Well, you know, it's like when I was playing sports in school, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, you go run around it, you run over it, you do any damn thing you have to do to put yourself in the situation that works best for you. And the more people do that, I mean, we're going to see more people that are serial entrepreneurs, people that want to own their own living. They want to be directly involved. They don't want to be an employee. This is what young people do before they go off on their own.
And COVID's, you know, we taking care of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I decided this year I was going to...
Free enterprise.
That's the entrepreneurial class.
Thing of the past. Yeah, they're gone.
I decided this year that I was going to address all my shortcomings, all the things that I was stupid about, which, you know, when I tabulated it all up, I had to admit to myself, you know, I was more stupid and more ignorant and more dumb about a whole lot more things that I think I'm wise to than I ever imagined. And that's why I decided this year I was going to grow my first garden. And now I'm learning how to garden indoors. Because a little one
wants
to. Can
you use a chainsaw yet?
No, I don't know how to use one. I've never used a chainsaw in my life. But
yeah,
I'd like
to learn. I burned wood for heat, so I was like, it's time I learned how to use a chainsaw. You know, and so there's that piece of it there. I still need access to gasoline, okay?
You know, when I was a child, I had to learn how to use an axe.
I can use that too, you know, and I can use a saw. I was doing things the Amish way for a while, but now I like all my electronic tools. I want a generator to power my electronic tools. I get a lot more done, you know, so it's like I don't want to remove myself completely from any of the good technology, because I don't have the same feeling about the technology. I love the technology. I love the research I was able to do online. In 99, I didn't even know there was so much on there. I thought it was a big shopping mall. And I find, you know, I found the Library of Congress online. I'm like, oh my God, look at all this. I go to the Department of Justice website. I can find every program I'm looking at. I go to the White House. Al Gore, man, they publish tons of stuff, you know. So it was sort of information overload, really. But at least, you know, I had it. I would never have figured this out or learned what I did had it not been access to the database that was already online. And at that time, it was... there was a lot more. It wasn't easy to find, but there was a lot more. Then they started burying it. They buried it for the last 10 years. And then now, like with the Great Reset, it is just like they reintroduced the whole thing with a new package, a new name, because they love to change the names of everything they're doing continually. So you become an expert in one of their programs, and that program doesn't exist anymore. Now it's something else. You know, like Agenda 21 was the agenda for the 21st century. And most people think that that meant the year 2000 and that Agenda 2030 is a continuation of it. No, Agenda 21 was the 21st century move. Then they have their 5-year, their 10-year, their 20-year plans throughout the 21st century. And they will be called Agenda 2050 and so forth, you know. So they have a plan. We don't. So we're in that position where the best defense is a good offense, and the only offense that we were doing is individually, like what he's doing with doctors. And I have been watching Robert Kennedy, by the way, and at first I was very hesitant about, you know, a real politician family doing anything valid, okay? But I haven't seen anything that he said that I disagree with in the least. And I was like, so happy. I'm like, thank God somebody out there is saying something.
Yeah.
That
somebody with gravitas.
Matters. Yeah.
So bright.
But I'm Breiser. Sorry. My next thing was that something's going to happen to that guy, you know? because he's too public. He's too prominent.
Breiser, I'm watching the clock. Can I weigh in with a final comment? And maybe we could go around.
We could go over for a little, for another 10 minutes, whatever everyone's happy with. If you're okay to hang in there.
Okay, well, I'll start out. That is compliments of J.J. Zapp, who interacts with Nikki on Facebook and Larkin, Texas, as well. So this is what he's wanting to get across. The foundation to communitarianism is the fiction that group and or communities have rights versus the fact that individual rights is the foundation for freedom to exist. So the way to fight communitarianism is to uphold individual rights, exclamation marks. Because without individual rights, there is no freedom for anyone, exclamation mark. Or as the feminists say, quote, my body, my choice, end quote, which cannot happen without individual rights. Thanks very much for the broadcast, Breiser. Turn over the mic.
No problem, yeah. Okay, yeah, we can wind it up here now, guys. Final thoughts from everyone. We'll go around the table. It was great to have you all on board, just to have this quick, a round table. We covered a lot of topics here, and, we'll do it again. Greg, I'll get you on again, maybe on the show by yourself, and Nikki as well, and we'll talk more. So we'll, we have a good few people talking today, but at least we got some good points out there. So anyway, Greg, I want to start with you. Any final points then, and again, plug any websites, anything that you want to put out there.
Well, people can follow me on social media. I'm operating three sites, a patient advocacy site, which is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. That's Get Out From Under, which I'll be doing lots of interviews with Robert Kennedy and stuff coming up the next couple of weeks. He's pretty busy. I have a channel exclusively for doctors called Private Practitioner Success on the same three platforms. And then my company, which I'm the chief executive of, which is LiveWell APS, our healthcare consulting firm. But I think you have to understand, we've already gotten hundreds of doctors to sign the Barrington Declaration. And we're on track that I'm going to be bringing in a gentleman that he's a very successful telemarketing operation, because the success of this is we can't do this through social media. We can't. These channels are too controlled. And what's effective is the old-fashioned way. We call a doctor on the phone, and we tell them, we explain the situation to them and how they have to join the effort. And literally every one of them does. It's not all lost. They know there's the problem, and they want to do their part to try and fix it as well. So stay tuned. The next few months are going to be very interesting.
Yeah. Are you getting a lot of traction there, Greg? Are these doctors responding in a positive way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that is great.
Yeah. Well, you've got to start somewhere. I know that they have a plan, but we can throw a spanner in the works on this law of consequences. We can throw that out there and mess everything up for them.
So, I'll tell you, that reminds me one thing. I will say one thing, though. Remember, the more they overhaul the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain.
Exactly. Lark, over to you. Final thoughts there?
Well, I was thinking just a moment ago that I can recommend an article that people can read on the internet, and it's called this, A Report on the Axemaker's Gift, Technology's Capture and Control of Our Minds and Culture. And read that, and then ask yourself, what are they proffering as a solution? Because the solution that they're putting out or putting forward is a communitarian solution. And I think that would be very interesting for people to read. Otherwise, people can find me on the internet. Just type in Larkin, Texas in any search engine. I've got two websites. The newest one I put up this year. I'm trying to keep it as simple, as concise, yet comprehensive as I can make it. I've got references to Nikki's work and other people's work. And there's a lot of very bright people out there. And I know I'm surrounded by very bright, intelligent people. I mean, I know that I'm in the company of bright, intelligent people tonight. What I want to do is I want to find out how we find some unemployed techies to help spread this message. And I'm talking about internet marketers and people with a brain still that realize there's something wrong, that perhaps might want to help people like Nikki or myself or Greg or Brian and Jenna or Bryser out and do a simple collaboration online. I, for one, have to tell you that I'm a technophobe 100%. This technology, I understand it is a tool and it can be wielded for good or for ill. I'm so down on it that I can't even hardly function. In fact, I can't today understand the difference between a file, a folder, an app. All the lingo, I never bothered to learn. I don't want to learn it. It's like, you know, I knew how to work on my 55 Chevy Bel Air. And I don't want to work on these cars today with all this tech crap on it. And it's
you're just an old boomer, okay? That's it.
Well, I don't, I know it's kind of cool, but then it breaks and then they want $1,500 to change out the brain of your car, you know?
I know.
Anyway, I'll just put it out this way, you know, I think the work is worthwhile. The discussions are very worthwhile. But here's my question. How do we reach 10 million people and get 10 million people to talk about this?
Well, we have to start somewhere, and if we can get through to 1, 2, 3, or 4 people, it may, you know, you don't know where it's going to go, you know. And I know, Lark, you've been at this for a long time, and you haven't, you know, it's been difficult to get a lot of traction on this, but now it's beginning to come out. It's been talked about a lot more, and the more they push this, the more people start looking at this Great Reset and see what's happening. They can then join the dots.
Bryser, I want to be the new Thomas Paine. I want to be a publisher. I want to put out something like Common Sense. You know, I want to put out something that's one page that's titled Post-Truth News. You know, we lie constantly so you don't have to. And then I'm going to poke fun of all the criminal communitarians in my midst.
Good. Exactly. Yeah, Brian and Jenna, final thoughts from yourselves?
No, I think we got it covered. Nothing comes to mind. I think you failed to mention the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which Alison McDowell and Lynn Davenport in Texas. These people know what this is. You called me up 3 weeks ago and said, stakeholder capitalism, Great Reset, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. These are communitarian, and I think I'm encouraging people to look into it and look at the second wave documentary and see what they're not talking about. This is very suspect. These are all of the internet gurus, David Brose, David Icke, James Corbett. Are they the communitarian story? No. I think they're misleading. So hats off to you, Bryser. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, John, as well. And finally, Nikki, yourself. I mean, I think we've all got to thank you because you put it out there at the beginning, really, because nobody figured this out before, and you saw it, and you were talking about it for years. You're banging your head against a brick wall most of the time, but, you know, it's out there now, you know, so it's great.
Out there now, and this is what we've decided to do. Our book is... We have two books in one. It's called 2020, Our Common Destiny, and WTF is the Hegelian Dialectic and the Historical Evolution of Communitarian Thinking are all in one ebook that we've been selling online for $17 for the book. and we've decided to make it free. And then if you want to make a donation, you can. So our books, which explain 2020, Our Common Destiny, is about the law, the policing, Agenda 21, and the local planning, and the words that they use, and the way that they manipulated us. And it's me and my daughter walking through the steps, and it tells you exactly how we found everything. And then part two is what we call the Anti-Communitarian Manifesto, which is explains the Hegelian dialectic and as much as I could learn about it, and how the methodology works. And then the part two, the historical evolution of communitarian thinking, is a basic overview of where it originated. Now, it doesn't go back 3,000 years, which it actually goes back a lot further than that. This is ancient stuff. It's religion. And like what they call the Talmud is law religionalized. And I call communitarian law religion legalized, okay? It's like the opposite now. So it's very religious. This is why the people that you deal with in the communitarian circles act like they're religious fanatics, like it's a cult. It's a religious cult. And I've done some work on that. I have a video out called The Green Virgin, because I was going to go deeper into the religious aspects and how they co-opted every church, because I know the Catholics, you know, have heard the word, because the Pope John Paul used communitarian, the Francis used it, Benedict used it. They call it the communitarian conversion of Christ. There's a lot of religion in the underneath this layers of this. Okay, so that part of it, I haven't published much on it, but the basic introduction to the philosophy. And philosophy is religion. It was always religion. So that's where it's so painful for people to see that, you know, it's in the Methodist Church, it's in the Lutheran Church, it's in the Baptist Church. I mean, I found writings on in every one of them, you know, that embrace this collectivist mentality. And so that information, you know, is going to be... It's important. It's an important piece that I avoided because I just didn't want to step on any toes or take away anyone's faith. And yeah. And that's my caution with this information, is that it's so ugly and so horrible that people will shut down. They just don't want to hear it. So find an easier, softer way to introduce it to them, maybe, and then, you know, kind of lay the cards out as you go, you know, because if you give them all of it at once, they shut down if they're not ready. And maybe if they're not ready, they don't even need to hear it. Find the ones that are ready, and they will come to you. Thousands of people have contacted me over the last 20 years. I've made good friends who understand and respect the work. And they, in turn, like Jenna, Lark, Vicky, there's so many people out there, Sean, they know who they are, you know? They have continually studied it, added to the body of work, and, you know, they never back down. Because once you know this, you can't go back. You can't see it and then unsee it. So there are people that it would destroy them to know it. So I don't seek those people out. I kind of wait for people to come to me. And that, maybe I'll change that methodology, okay? But at this point, it's only people who want to know that I want to talk to.
Yeah, I think that's the same with me, too. I talked to a lot of my family members, they don't want to know. So I said, okay, leave it. Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Drop in a few little nuggets here and there and let them think about it, but then just leave it there. There's no point.
Yeah, let them come back to you, because I've had a couple friends who contacted me that I knew in Seattle and said everything that I said and told them was coming happened, and they're kind of freaked out now, you know. Mm-hmm. But they're letting me know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'd throw into the acknowledgments a Miss Mer Bailey in the chat room, who sent a significant contribution to Nikki in the world of batteries, generators and inverters to live in the snow in a tent and still be able to put out this broadcast. Hats off to you, Mer Bailey. Brian and Jenna out.
Yes, yeah. Thanks, Mer Bailey. Thank you for that. Yeah. And Nikki, for a bit, you're out there in the middle of Alaska and, you know, getting off grid, because that's not the most easiest place in the world to do it, but you're doing it, and, you know, shows you we can do it. If you want to do it, what a mind to it, we can do it, you know.
You know what?
I'll do it happily.
Yeah.
Breiser, one of the cutest things Nikki ever said that really made me smile at the time, and I smile thinking about it today. She said that she was waiting for all the smart guys to take the subject up so she didn't have to. She wanted the real writers to write about it, not me. And I initially saw my role in all this is that I was going to support Nikki. You know, the only reason I went over to Facebook is because I wanted to support Nikki. The only reason I supported what was that stupid website that Patrick Wood's son set up, you know, with all the futurists and stuff. I joined you because you invited people at your website to come and join you over there. And I thought, well, okay, I need to go support Nikki, you know. And finally, I just, after the years, I mean, we've been mostly incommunicado, Nikki. I just had to start doing this work on my own, from my own perspective. And I had to think about what that small 8-year-old boy wanted out of life when I was sitting alone in the forest, just contemplating the world instead of what everybody else expected of me.
Well, yeah, because maybe the best plan, when people ask me, what should I do? And I said, first of all, figure out what's going on and then see what you come up with. Because I'm not going to answer that question for you. Every one of us has to have their own plan. So maybe the way to beat it is to have million plans, a million different plans coming back at them. They have one.
Yeah,
we have
exactly.
The opportunity to have endless number.
And I like to remind people that, you know, you're unique and one of a kind in all of creation. There's never been another one of you. There will never be another one again. And so that right there should tell you all you need to know about your place in this world. And so, carpe diem.
That's it. Right, folks, listen, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Fantastic chat. Great to get to know you all. And, we'll all stay in touch. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. Hope you enjoyed that one. And listen, we'll be back with you again same time next week. And, we're going to talk more about this, folks, because this is where it's going, and we have to be ready. This is it now. It's the communitarian world order. That's where we're going. So let's know what we're dealing with, and it's becoming more blatant day by day now. So, and we can do it. You know, we can all, as I said, Nikki says, we can all have our own little plan and throw millions of plans out there and just mess it all up for them. Mess up their
that
big
would be
stupid
wonderful.
Plan. Yeah, mess it up big time. So, we'll be leaving it at that, folks. So, thanks again very much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care now. Bye bye.
Thanks, y'all.
Zagoyim.